Ah, yes. Seems it's that time again. I'm Matt Mittler, and this is Kaufman's Holiday. It's part two, The Man in the Tunnel. We're back in Newport now, scene of the crime. Of course, there'll be more scenes and more crimes. Makes sense, right? Else, this wouldn't be Sunday Night Noir. And we're now on episode 8, in case you lost track. And starting right in with Chapter 50. No point renting formal wear without a guarantee for an unblemished return. Shoes were more of an issue. Rubber soles. A fashion gaffe, but de rigueur for a gumshoe. Kaufman found a decent pair next door to where he purchased the tux. The shoes maneuvered well. He was able to scale the rock face of Cliff Walk without a slip. Rudimentarily bandaged and safely cased in leather gloves, his hands were equally adept to the challenge, and the pain was now only like some annoyingly talkative friend. Kaufman took to the lawn of Horizon House, kept his hands in his pockets to avoid attention, and circumnavigated the assemblage of swells. No big band tonight, just a string quartet playing Albinoni, faces bored and lifeless. Guests weren't bothering to listen anyway. Kaufman gave a quick 360. No Walsh. No Mara or Bradley Glenn. No Cloak. He checked his watch. 5 to 8. Perfect. He dipped back into the shadows and angled toward the kitchen door. A blur rushed up at his side.
Zowie, Mr. Kaufman. You look just like a screen star.
Gerald grinned like he'd just heard his first dirty joke. Kaufman glanced over his shoulder.
So, who's in the kitchen, kid?
Well, there's the waitstaff.
Is Harlow around?
The butler?
Yeah.
No, Mr. Kaufman, I didn't see him. Does that make it safe?
It's never safe, Gerald.
Kaufman grabbed his arm and looked him in the eye.
Stay close. But not too close. And let me know if anyone's coming, especially Harlow.
Yes, sir, Mr. Kaufman.
The boy stood at attention, but Kaufman gave him a pat on the back and pushed him toward the outer hall. The kitchen staff was in battle mode, white-clad and covered with sweat. They slid in and out of each other's way like so many salmon in a stream. Kaufman coolly started pulling bills out of his wallet. He counted to 57 by the time all commotion had ceased.
"Don't mean to interrupt."
He began to move through the room, carefully placing a packet of singles in each worker's hands.
"But I've got a couple of questions I'd love to get some answers to."
That was absolutely masterful, Mr. Kaufman.
That's why I make the big bucks, Gerald. Keep moving.
The boy put a little skip in his step. Kaufman let it slide.
What's your sense of this party, kid?
Well, it seems sort of businesslike, sir.
That's what I'm picking up, too.
Gerald halted, and Kaufman smacked into him. The boy spun around. He began to sputter and gesticulate wildly. Kaufman wanted to slap him, but the voice intervened.
Mr. Kaufman.
Gerald, scram,
Kaufman hissed. The kid darted down the hall. The voice came closer.
Seems you were being led astray, Mr. Kaufman. This is the way...
I know the drill, Harlow.
I'm afraid you don't know much of anything, Mr. Kaufman. Follow me.
But this time, Harlow didn't escort Kaufman out of Horizon House. He led him down a wainscoted corridor behind the study and opened the closet door.
What's this, a dumbwaiter?
Yes, Mr. Kaufman,
hushed Harlow.
Now wait here and play dumb.
In here?
Harlow laid a firm hand on Kaufman's shoulder and set him in the tiny space. He placed a finger to his lips and made the international sign for silence. Then he closed the door before Kaufman could ask another question. The sound of the key turning in the lock was distinctly unwelcome. Kaufman tried to adjust his eyes to the dark. A crack of light outlined the door, but that was it. He felt like an adult for not putting up a fight. Now what? Resigned, he rested his head against the back of the tomb. Murmurings. He placed an ear to the wood panels. Walsh. Walsh and his cronies, loud and clear. He smiled. Harlow sure knew his hideaways. Tapping from outside. Kaufman steeled himself.
Harlow?
A key turned in the lock. The door slowly opened.
Perfect timing.
She closed the door behind her, locking it from inside.
We could have arranged a more appropriate rendezvous, Miss Walsh.
You're the one with all the surprises. What did you expect from me?
I was gonna fill you in later. Meanwhile, your pop's in there divvying up Germany.
I seriously doubt that.
What's he doing, then?
She leaned into the wall, inches from his face. He couldn't see a thing, but her breath smelled like chewing gum.
Ever hear of Faust?
She whispered.
He's inking a pact with the devil?
Only his soul's already sold. All that's left for barter is his bank account.
So you're onto this game, then?
Who you think told Harlow about my little hiding place?
Shh!
That's Victor. He's a big player.
Golf?
You know what I mean.
She kneed him in the thigh.
Watch it, sister.
He did know what she meant. Victor Beckford. Old walrus face from the Viking. He tuned in on the voice.
5.5 million? Is that what I heard? 5.5 million?
You heard it all right.
She placed a hand on the middle of his back.
Your father's asking for a guarantee of participation. What's that about? Wait.
He listened more.
That's that shyster, Horner.
Beckford's laughing.
Her hand rose up and clamped the back of his neck.
He's saying something about a paper trail that no one can know.
Know what?
He tried to pull away, but there was nowhere to go.
Listen, that's Cyrus Doyle. They're getting ready in New Mexico, and they'll all benefit if the test's a success.
Mara leaned against him, crunching a crisp taffeta.
Victor again. The future is in science?
Kaufman angled himself into the wall, kept his voice on low.
What's this got to do with your brother? If Clayton wants to throw his money around, fine, but I don't get the connection.
You have to get it.
And I thought all I had to do was solve a murder. Too bad. I was getting close.
Close is good. What do you have?
A ticket.
What kind of ticket?
She pressed in.
To Germany. Got me a guided tour of Dora Mittelbau.
He squirmed, raised his pulsing hands for protection.
Provided you still need the report.
I need everything. She snaked an arm around him. And you, Mr. Detective, need a going-away gift.
Her breasts met his chest 3 buttons down from his clip-on bow tie. Would have used a 4-in-hand, but his paws were barely functional. He had something to say, but the words cut somewhere south of his esophagus. A Frankenstein moan came up from his bowels, and he hopelessly hung his head.
I am going to double your salary.
Her voice sparked in the darkness. There was a sharp click, and the door swung open. She took him by the arm and yanked him into the light. He was still trying to process the conversation they'd collected, let alone the pas de deux that accompanied it. Then he heard footsteps rounding the corner. Kaufman tried to duck back into the closet, but Maura grabbed him.
This will throw them off,
she chirped, then stretched up on patent-leathered toes and deposited her lips squarely onto his. Lips like ripe fruit. Too ripe. And forbidden in this particular garden. But then, it had been a long day. Eventually, Kaufman opened his eyes. That's when Bradley Glenn's fist came into view. He found himself in a twisted heap on the carpet. The first thing he noticed was the warm breeze. It danced in through open doors leading out to the balcony. The balcony where young Paddy made his final appearance.
Get a nice nap?
The gravel voice, the unmistakable sound of ice clinking glass. He propped himself up on one elbow. Walsh had removed his tux jacket and loosened the tie at his throat. He sat in a Victorian armchair, legs crossed, drink in hand, his foot tapping a silent beat. Kaufman's face pounded, seemed to follow the same rhythm as the foot.
Rested, rejuvenated, and ready for brunch, Kaufman said dryly.
Sorry, sport. No room service.
And I thought this was a 4-star establishment.
We should have his balls cut off. It was Glenn. He'd been out on the balcony. Kaufman grinned, though it made his nose hurt worse.
Brilliant. Then I'd just be like you, a eunuch.
Glenn gave him a kick in the spleen. Kaufman grabbed his side and crunched up into a sitting position. Walsh rose and went over to a marble counter and deposited his drink on a coaster.
You're a handicap on my game, Kaufman. Makes it hard to play.
He returned with an envelope in his hand.
What'll it take to keep you off my course? 100? 200? 1,000?
Bills fluttered down over Kaufman. He held out a gloved hand.
Should have brought my raincoat. I thought Jews would do anything for a buck,
Glenn snarled.
What's the price, Kaufman?
Walsh continued to shower him.
What'll it be? Just name it. 2,000 and I'll throw in an extra grand, too.
He threw the remaining wad to the floor.
Stay the fuck away from that little bitch!
He tore his voice, screaming. Now it was hushed and hoarse. Sandpaper on brick.
Take it, if you know what's good for you, you lousy piece of shit!
He rasped. Kaufman pulled off the clip-on, opened his collar, fingered the silver chain around his neck. He withdrew the colonel's mezuzah and brushed the burnished silver lightly across his lips. Stood and picked up a Franklin.
Got a purple heart you could throw in for spice?
Glenn came at him and Kaufman geared into reverse, laid his elbow into the boy's belly and swung the back of his fist up in his face. The boy fell to his knees, clamped his hands over his nose, which shot a spurt of blood onto the carpet.
The bump'll give you some character, Glenn. Long as you don't mind looking a little, you know, Jewish.
Walsh barreled over and Kaufman turned, met him straight in the eye.
You hate me because I'm digging around Patty's grave or your own? Go ahead, Walsh, take me down. You'll be going right along with me.
Then he dropped the bill to the floor and silently exited the room. Gerald was at the bottom of the steps when Kaufman appeared. He perked up and began to pace the polished tiles. No sign of Harlow, though, or Mara, for that matter. Kaufman descended the steps, his rubber soles making an inelegant squeak.
Settle down, Gerald.
I didn't know what to do. I saw that guy punch you. Then he and another guy carried you upstairs. Was I supposed to give the note to the girl?
Don't worry about that now. Where is she?
She slapped the guy that hit you. Then she ran away.
Interesting. Guess I'm about finished here for the night. I appreciate your assistance.
So, I should just continue with bussing drinks?
Whatever you want.
Okay. One other thing I guess I'm supposed to tell you, sir.
What's that, Gerald?
His nose smarted and sent a spear up between his eyes. Coupled with the agony in his blistered paws, he was not in the most jovial of moods. Gerald backed away and raised his hands in limp defense.
Police are outside,
he blurted.
I think they're waiting for you.
The squad car was parked in the driveway, Laurel and Hardy leaning casually against the side. The fat one was eating from a tray of boiled shrimp. Kaufman held out his hands, wrist to wrist.
I'm not fighting you, boys. Dump me at the ferry if you want. I gotta get back to Providence anyways.
Who says we're taking you in?
Laurel strutted over, craned his neck to add an inch to his paltry frame.
We got a special delivery. Right, Hattery?
Hardy placed the tray on the hood of the heap, wiped his hands on his chest. He pulled an envelope out of his back pocket and lumbered over to Kaufman, belched cocktail sauce in his face.
The girl wanted to make sure you got this before you left, he sneered.
Kaufman reached for the envelope.
Seems like everybody wants to give me money.
Put on the brakes, crap man. Me and Sergeant Trask here get a delivery fee.
I'd figure Miss Walsh has already paid you boys smartly.
Hattery's ham fist shot into Kaufman's stomach.
Then again,
Kaufman choked,
I think I forgot to send in a Christmas bonus.
Laurel sidled over. With his idiot grin, he actually did resemble the slapstick comic. He took the envelope and began to count.
One for you.
He handed a bill to Kaufman.
And one for we. And one for you. And one for we. And one...
I'd say that's enough, gentlemen,
Kaufman interjected. They glared at him.
I mean, I do have to report my expenses, and I'm sure you don't want the little lady calling some other dirty cops next time she needs to be served and protected.
Hardy hauled off and socked him in the gut again.
What was that for?
Kaufman wheezed.
That's for 4 nights at the fucking Viking,
bellowed Hardy. Then he tossed the envelope at Kaufman's feet and waddled away. Kaufman picked himself up off the gravel, winked at the other cop who was still counting his change.
You know, Laurel, you're really the funny one.
Chapter 51. Providence was feeling somewhat less like home. Kaufman decided to stop by the office first. Didn't figure on sleeping, so no point heading over to transit. As promised, a manila envelope was waiting for him under the door. Postmarked, North White Plains. Inside, an ID tag. Mo Koffler. Look Magazine. Press. And a scribbled note. Affix your yeshiva-lovin' face. How the colonel managed this, Kaufman couldn't even guess. He went over to his desk and ransacked the drawers, looking for an appropriate pic. A smattering of family snapshots. Eli and Judith. Various baby pictures of Rachel and Sammy. A few photos of his mother and father. Void of humor, but always touching each other. Hand in hand. Arm around waist. Kaufman flashed on their charred, entwined remains. He didn't have a print of that shot. Didn't need one. It was branded on his brain. He looked again at the ID. Mo Koffler. C-O-F-F-L-E-R. Koff, K-A-U-F. Ler, L-E-R. Koff. Man. Jewelers. And here he thought he was just being clever, snatching a name out of the blue. Everything had a meaning, if you only stopped to consider. Some investigator he was. Bottom drawer left. He opened it slowly. Closed cases neatly filed, and behind them, an old cigar box. White owl. He pulled out the box and raised the lid. Only thing inside was a silver lighter, tarnished like a bruise. He lifted it carefully and ran a blistered fingertip over the engraving. Chapter 52.
Look, they give me a trapeze.
Reed reached up and grabbed the bar with both hands, hoisted himself off the mattress, and dropped back down with a whump.
You're all set for Barnum and Bailey.
Yeah, I'm the legless wonder,
the kid snickered.
And you can be the amazing flipper man.
That's what I get for toasting marshmallows without a stick.
Kaufman had a ball of gauze wrapped around the end of each arm, courtesy of St. Joe's. At least they let a few fingers stick out at the ends. He placed a carton of Luckies on Reed's nightstand, noticed a postcard balanced against a cup with a bendy straw, blue sky, palm trees. Sandy Beach.
Fan mail?
Reed plucked the card and spun it through the air to Kaufman.
Richards. That's definitely the end of the Patriots. He's hitched to some slant eye. Gonna settle there after the war.
The eternal allure of the other. Kaufman nodded approvingly. He returned the card to its place, nudged a chair over to the bed, and sat down.
Robert Richards. Well, he was never on my list anyway. It was the rest of you boys I was after.
If you think it was one of us what killed Patrick, you're wrong. We were blood brothers.
Blood brothers? Kaufman braced his puffy fists on the arms of the chair.
Thanks for the cigs, Mo. Didn't think you'd make good.
Reed cracked a crooked smile.
You gonna light me? Flint's in the drawer.
That's all right. I got one here.
Kaufman reached into his pocket.
What's my name, Johnny?
What do you mean? It's Mo.
My last name.
Shit. I don't know. Fishman?
Kaufman pulled out the silver souvenir.
Try Kaufman.
Reed wriggled his stumps and pushed himself back against the headboard. His pale face grew paler as he struggled to surface from his morphine depths.
Okay,
he said uncertainly.
So your name's Kaufman?
Kaufman held the lighter between the exposed digits of his right hand. His thumb was free, and with it he flipped the top and struck the flint. A flame shot up.
Sanguinis vinculum,
he pronounced.
What's that?
Reed chortled.
You're starting to speak in tongues?
Sanguinis vinculum,
Kaufman repeated. He sailed the lighter through the air, watching the flame bend and sway.
That's Latin. Blood brothers.
Reed was looking around for some escape. Maybe he could swing himself out of the window on his chin-up bar. Kaufman watched coolly as the boy shifted in his sheets.
Where do you want the light, Johnny? Foot of the bed? Edge of your nightgown? Maybe I should just spill some whiskey, toss the lighter, and lock the door on you.
How'd you get that?
Reed sputtered.
Wrong question, flyboy.
Kaufman rose, still playing with the lighter, dancing it in front of Reed's eyes.
We was just trying to scare him.
Reed was hyperventilating.
I'd say you pretty much succeeded at that. Course it's easy, with your little gang, holding each other's hands. But now you're all alone.
He leaned over Reed and moved the flame towards his frightened face.
Did you do it alone?
It was an accident.
The kid cowered, eyes wet, nose streaming.
Nah, it wasn't an accident, Johnny. It was premeditated.
It was an accident. I swear it.
Swear on your mother's grave.
Kaufman pinched Reed by the wrist and forced his hand over the flame.
How about my mother's grave?
He placed a knee on the kid's other arm, pinning the paraplegic to the mattress. His IV popped out and a blot of blood bled into the bedsheet.
You knew the terrain, punk. Had the equipment. What'd you use? Petrol? Spirits? Answer me, you sawed-off son of a bitch!
Vodka! Vodka!
Reed screamed, his palm beginning to smoke.
What a waste of good liquor.
Kaufman flipped the lid shut with a snap.
Why?
We knew them,
he whimpered.
Used to bring in certain items to sell.
Certain items? Like a necklace from some colored gal on a prom date?
I don't know. I don't remember. Anyhow, your folks never asked questions. They were happy to fork over some dough, put the stuff up for resale. Whatever it was, didn't matter to them.
You say my folks were as rotten as you?
Kaufman placed an elbow on one of Reed's stumps and leaned into it.
Maybe they were,
the kid shouted defiantly. Kaufman let up. Yeah, maybe they were.
It's nothing they should have died for,
he said, and went over to the window.
I know. I know.
Reed laid back down, stared at the ceiling tiles.
We had this arrangement, you know, with your folks. Went on for a couple of years, and then they cut out. No explanation.
Like they owed you one.
I don't know. But we got mad. Like, who the hell were they? I mean, that's how we felt. We went over there and there was closing, and they said if we kept hounding them, they'd call the cops.
And the alarm called Peter Glenn.
That was Bradley. Anonymous, of course. He tried to stop us. We just pushed him aside. We've been drinking and, well, that's how we were. We just wanted them to buy this ring or whatever it was. That's all. Mr. Kaufman, your dad, he was sort of daring us. Your mom didn't say a word, but she looked pretty hard. Patrick and Jimmy started cursing him and egging me on. Richards, too, he thought it was a hoot. I had the bottle and the lighter. I didn't get it. Your folks, they just stood there, all defiant and all. I mean, they could have got out if they tried. And then the fire, it just... I didn't expect it to be so out of control like that. Watched it from the alley across the street. Fire trucks came, and then Bradley's dad and all. Anyways, we saw the roof collapse and bolted. Bradley was out of his nut. Patrick brought us all to Clayton for help, and he could get riled, but I'd never seen him that angry. Smacked Pat flat across the face. Went to his study, made some calls. When he came back out, he told us the next day, first thing in the morning, we was all gonna enlist. And that was it. We never talked about it again. None of us. We'd hurt people, sure. But we never killed nobody. It was horrible. I know. It was horrible. If I could undo it, believe me, I would.
Reed looked up at Kaufman.
What you gonna do to me?
He sobbed. There were lots of things Kaufman could have done. Revenge is a tasty fantasy. But right now, a clot was sticking in his throat.
Nothing, he answered. God beat me to it.
Kaufman had time to walk over to Point Street Bridge, so that's what he did. Traipsing along Friendship, he found himself cursing Reed, cursing Clayton Walsh, cursing his parents. His parents. Go ahead, set the place on fire. See if I care. Yeah, he had a touch of that himself. But why the hell didn't they fight back? Yell, scream. Something. He mopped his face with his bandaged hand. Maybe if you've been expecting the worst your entire life, you don't make a fuss when it finally happens. Well, he could thank Maura Walsh for setting him up to solve one lousy mystery. Lot of good it did. Would Joseph and Hannah now rest in peace? Would he? Peter Glenn was right. Sometimes answers don't make it any better. Chapter 53.
If you hold up your arms, you'll look like a walking Q-tip.
Thanks, Goldie. That makes me feel much better.
Paint them brown and use them for boxing mitts.
Yeah, and I can use your head for a punching bag.
Least you got doctored.
And managed to squeeze in another visit with Johnny Reed. Turns out he's the prick that lit the jewelry shop. Him and the whole damn Patriot gang. Not much by way of the Walsh case, except I'm sure now it's why the girl hired me.
The toothpick fell out of Goldstein's mouth.
Wow, Mo. Wow.
He patted down a patch of hair and leaned over the railing.
Well, you figured she'd had some ploy. What'd you do with them?
Read? Nothing.
Nothing?
Kaufman didn't answer. Goldstein pulled out a fresh pick. Kaufman reached over, plucked one for himself. They both stabbed around at their gums, staring off down the river.
Send Allegra off?
Kaufman asked.
All the way to Chicago?
Goldstein glanced at Kaufman.
You kinda took the glow out of her.
She'll be better off.
Will you?
Kaufman closed his eyes, listened to the starlings perched on the truss above.
We're sort of a team, aren't we, Goldie?
I always said we was.
I mean, more than just working a case now and then. You're like a brother. Not like Eli, like a real brother.
Kaufman turned toward him, removed his hat, and held it in his swathed hand.
Don't get all mushy on me, Mo. You ain't gonna die in Germany. That part of the war's over. You'll be back before Tish B'Av.
Right.
He replaced the hat.
I guess I just wanted you to know that you mean a lot to me. Our friendship means a lot.
Likewise, pal. Now just cut the sap before I barf. Got any new poop?
Yeah.
He leaned on the railing.
Your friend Slim was a font of enlightenment. Also snagged an interview with some help at Horizon House.
What'd they have to say?
More what they didn't say. But they all hated the hero, Walsh. Slim wasn't much of a fan either. Of any of them. Also managed to eavesdrop on some kind of summit. No idea what it means, but there's big bucks at stake.
Sounds juicy. You gonna up the ante?
What do you think?
Kaufman's chest was pressed against the railing. He spit out his toothpick and focused on Goldstein.
Push me.
What are you, bananas?
Just push me.
You're upset, Mo. It's natural, but...
It's not my folks, Goldie. It's about something Slim said. Come on.
You're out of your mind.
He gave him an uncommitted shove. Kaufman bounced against the rail.
Harder.
Whatever you say, boss.
Goldstein threw his entire underweight self into it. Again, Kaufman bounced off the railing. He stepped away, rubbed his sternum, coughed.
The trouble with suicide, Goldie, is that if Walsh had jumped, he would have landed face down, his head away from the house, or flipped on his back with his head pointed in. As it was, he belly-flopped, head homeward.
Okay, so he was pushed. That's why they call it murder.
But not so easy, as we've just demonstrated. Try it now.
This time Kaufman placed his back to the railing.
It's a 60-foot drop, Mo.
Kaufman raised a mitten and beckoned with the little nubs that stuck out of the wadding. Goldstein lowered his head, hunched his shoulders, and charged. Kaufman's spine slammed into the railing. When he regained his breath, he realized he'd forgotten to secure his hat, and it had fit him ever so smartly. He looked down to the river. There it was, gently flowing downstream. The two of them rested on their elbows and watched the Borsellino leisurely drift away.
So, how's the writing, Henry?
Working on a new book, Tropic of Kishka, but I hit a block.
That's how it goes.
Think I'll try poetry instead.
Well, you're good with limericks.
Also gonna change my name.
Yeah?
Yeah. Walt Whitman.
Whitman, huh?
Whatcha think?
Sounds Jewish.
The hat was almost out of sight. Kaufman sighed and swiveled around, pressed down his bandaged hands and propped himself up on the railing, sat there looking up at the hazy sun. Then he looked over at Goldstein.
One more time.
I don't believe this.
Come on, Goldie. Here, just as we are. Casual. I'm sitting on the rail. You're facing it. All you gotta do is...
Kaufman drew Goldstein's arm across his chest and pinned his hand to his shoulder.
Shouldn't we wait for a slow song?
Goldstein asked.
Do it.
And Goldstein pressed against Kaufman. And Kaufman flipped over the rail.
All right, schmuck. Now help me up.
He was dangling over the edge, a gauzy fist clamped onto the steel beam.
Jesus Christ, Mo! I told you, this is insanity!
Goldstein managed to secure a grip on Kaufman's lapel. It took three tries, but he was finally able to yank him back up. They both collapsed, panting.
That's it, Goldie!
Kaufman wheezed.
I should hope so.
No, that's how it went down. Face to face. No struggle. No fight. Effortless. It was somebody Patrick felt relaxed around. Somebody he trusted. A father. A friend.
Goldstein raised his bushy brows.
Maybe.
Kaufman nodded.
Or maybe.
He rearranged the bindings on his wounds.
A confused little sister.
Chapter 54.
Welcome aboard, Mr. Koffler.
She reached out a calloused hand, grabbed him by the crook of the arm, and hoisted him up into the cabin. He was impressed by the nurse's manly bicep, even more so by her manly face.
We'll be taking off in a few. I'll strap down your suitcase. You can buckle your own self in.
She gestured to a row of canvas seats along the hull of the craft. A number of medics were already secured. None looked terribly excited to be going. Some appeared even more worn than Kaufman. He settled himself in, the recruit next to him watching as he fumbled with his seatbelt.
You could always use your teeth, he advised.
Kaufman waved a mitt.
That's what I get for stealing from the cookie jar.
Next time try to not get caught, said the recruit with a wink.
He glanced at Kaufman's tag.
Look, huh?
Yeah,
Kaufman answered uncertainly.
You read it?
Nah,
said the medic and cracked open a volume of Keats. Kaufman rested his head back against the fuselage. The engines were revving up, and his teeth began to rattle. He looked around the metal hull. How was this iron-ribbed leviathan supposed to leave ground, let alone travel across the ocean? It clearly wasn't possible. Kaufman began to break out in a cold sweat.
Would you like something to help you sleep?
It was the nurse again. She looked at Kaufman like he was a ticking bomb.
No thanks, I'm fine.
Well, if you need anything, just holler. I'll be strapping in, but once we're steady, I'll be able to come around.
I appreciate that.
She studied his hands, concerned. He looked up at her.
Made a bad call with a Lipton soup mix.
Gotta watch out for that, she said. Always read the label.
And she stirred off to her seat. The guy next to Kaufman raised an eyebrow. Kaufman addressed him, deadpan.
Sometimes I have soup with my cookies.
Yeah, I didn't say nothing,
he protested and resumed reading.
Long as you don't toss your cookies.
Thank you.
For the first 40 minutes, Kaufman thought he was going to die. For the next 40, he knew it for a fact. He didn't care much for carnival rides, and this was worse than any ride he'd ever ridden. It was on a 90-degree dip to the right that his facade crumbled, and he did, in fact, toss his cookies. "Here's a bag. Use this." He used it immediately.
"Sorry, nurse," he said, collapsing back against the seat frame.
"Don't worry, honcho. Happens to the best of 'em. It's a little cold. Can I get you a blanket?"
"Yeah. Thought it was just me. Is there any heat?"
The recruit chuckled.
"You're in a C-46.
"What's that?"
Kaufman asked, suppressing further eruptions. The nurse filled him in.
"They also call them flying coffins. Not just 'cause of the shape. They got heater problems. Sometimes explode during flight."
"So the pilots are a little leery of flipping the switch," explained the recruit.
Kaufman scanned the interior of the airship. It did look like a coffin. His coffin. He cradled the bag between his knees and heaved up his kishkas. Landed at an evac hospital. The sun was rising in an empty ochre sky. Kaufman was led past a mile of tents tending to 500 or so soldiers. After dropping off supplies, the transport would load up as many patients as it could and zip them back stateside. Kaufman could catch a return flight with the wounded. Something to look forward to.
"What's that over there?"
He gestured to a larger tent, with nurses rushing in and out of the flaps, and muffled cries issuing through the canvas. His guide, a hefty-sized slit-mouthed MP, grunted,
"They got the guys in there from Buchenwald, the concentration camp. Intensive care ain't doing it for 'em. They drop like flies. Still, it's better than a goddamn field hospital. Most of those guys ain't going nowhere, except underground."
Kaufman didn't ask any more questions. There was a train station not far away. The MP took Kaufman there by jeep. No hail and farewell. He just dumped him and his bag and drove off. All Kaufman knew was that a train would be coming sometime that day, and it would be heading somewhere near the Dora Mittelbau camp, a town called Ornordhausen. The station was a mass of rubble, as was every other building he'd seen. A couple more MPs stood at the edge of the platform, sharing a cigarette. They didn't even look in his direction. The train was crammed with servicemen from all over. Rowdy, loud. Even the corridors were full. Men leaning out windows, sitting on duffels, sandwiched into each other. Kaufman imagined the boxcars in Dachau. That was a mistake. He went from car to car, wedging his way through the packed aisles, peering into every available cabin, all full. He finally gave up and entered an 8-passenger unit that already held 8 passengers. Soldiers, but not U.S.
"Dzień dobry, panie."
A man with an unpleasant resemblance to Dopey of the 7 Dwarves raised a bottle. The spelling was off, but even with a W at the start, Kaufman knew what it was. Vodka. Another man stood up unsteadily and ushered Kaufman in, seating him in his place. Fumes of B.O. and alcohol rose off his rumpled uniform.
"Amerikansky?"
This was as good an offer as Kaufman was going to get. He held up his name tag and showed it all around.
"Koffler."
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 "Close enough, comrades. Just don't ask me to arm wrestle."
"Look, magazine,"
one of them declared.
"Gin Tierney, I very like."
He grinned, exposing a yellowed row of uppers.
"Look, magazine, tech picture."
He leaned into his buddies and they all flashed their scummy teeth.
"No pictures,"
Kaufman apologized. He tried to make a motion of writing with his swaddled hands. The men thought that was hysterical. They all began to make writing gestures with hands balled up. This could be a worse trip than the air transport. The bottle had passed to an older fellow with a wire brush of a mustache sitting across from him. He finished chortling and held out the drink. Kaufman looked into the man's red-veined eyes. This was a doomed relationship.
"No thanks,"
Kaufman said politely.
"Proszę,"
insisted the soldier.
"No." "Proszę bardzo."
He nodded his head up and down.
"I don't drink."
Kaufman shook his head side to side. The man got up from his perch and lurched forward. His pals began to chant in agreement.
"Skola! Skola! Skola!"
"Proszę panie,"
he pleaded, but underneath was an unmistakable threat of violence. Not that he didn't think about it every day, but he wasn't about to fall off the wagon now, at least not on a train with a band of smashed Polacks. He took the bottle between his bandaged hands.
"Here's mud in your eye,"
he toasted, and strategically let the bottle slip through the wraps and shatter on the floor. The soldiers were stunned, but only temporarily. Dopey, with a nose so swollen and red-specked he could have done time with Ringling, opened a valise. Inside were a half-dozen more bottles. He took one out, and the men hushed in reverence. The bottle passed hand to hand and mouth to mouth. When it came Kaufman's turn, one of the men held it to his lips so he wouldn't have to use his mitts. The scent soared up his nose, did a tap dance in his head. He tightened his smile, seized the bottle, showing them that he could handle it solo this time, and feigned a healthy swig. They cheered, and he passed it on, dreading the return round. Somehow, he kept up this charade until the last sip was celebrated, and then the next bottle was unleashed. Outside the window, a blur of green glided by. Mustache leaned forward again. He pointed to himself and said,
"Andre,"
then pointed to the men next to him.
"Staszek, Tomasz, Krzysztof."
The other men announced themselves.
"Pavel,"
"Piotr,"
"Tadeusz,"
"Zbigniew."
Kaufman wearily held up his tag.
"Mo."
"Mo!"
they all repeated in unison.
"Mo?"
asked Dopey, a.k.a. Zbigniew, who now had the honor of standing.
"Moses,"
Kaufman explained, and suddenly wished he hadn't. Sleepy jerked towards him, leaned over, and made an upside-down triangular mark on Kaufman's chest, then a right-side-up triangle on top of that. The Star of David.
"You are Yev?"
he asked suspiciously. The men stared at Kaufman, eyes pink, lips wet. He slowly rose. Maybe it was time to change cabins. The Pole wrapped a limp arm across Kaufman's shoulder and hugged him to his sweaty breast. Then he lowered his head and proceeded to puke all over Kaufman's feet. Kaufman looked down at the mustard-yellow puddle. Ivory chunks dotted the putrid ooze. Potatoes, no doubt. Dopey looked up at Kaufman with a sloppy grin and started to laugh. The other soldiers began to laugh, too.
"Yev!"
one of them howled. Dopey liked that.
"Yev!"
he giggled, then pointed at Kaufman's vomit-soaked shoes and laughed even harder. Yev, V for W, as in vodka, Y for... Kaufman looked at him blankly. Then he drew back a fist and let it slam into the oaf's drunken mug. He pulled it back, bandages bloodied from where he'd split open the poor sap's cheek, and landed another one, then another, and another. Blood spattered as the cartoon face crumpled in. He was out from the first hit, but Kaufman propped him up against the cabin window and just kept punching. The other men stumbled to their feet and tackled Kaufman to the ground. He wailed away on them. Then they hoisted him up, dragged him out of the cabin, and tossed him off the train. Let's end it here, shall we? Kaufman, newly ensconced in Germany. Bet you never saw that one coming. This has been Episode 8, Kaufman's Holiday, Part 2, The Man in the Tunnel, Chapters 50 to 54. So, who's the man in the tunnel? Hold your horses, Kimosabe. I'd like to thank Chris Durian for our theme song, Case Closed. And my old pal, Arthur Rosen, for tinkling the ivories throughout. So listen. Sunday Night Noir is hosted by Radio Free Brooklyn. And they might be a bunch of palookas, but they could sure use a helping hand. Money-wise, that is. So how about it? Go to radiofreebrooklyn.com/pledge and give them something, anything. They're not particular. And while you're at it, why don't you consider sponsoring a show like, say, Kaufman's Holiday? It'd make my mother happy. Verstehst? Okay. This is Matt Mittler signing off. But I'll be back. You'll hear me coming. My floor chimes clacking on the cobblestones.